I know it's really hard to believe, but Kyle and I are everyday, regular, normal folks who go through the same things that you do. If you're ever reading like People magazine, they have those spreads that say like, oh, they're just like us. You know, they're eating ice cream or they're peeing their pants or, you know, they're doing things that you just wouldn't assume that a famous person would have to face on a daily basis. But we do have to face those things. Currently, we have guests at our house. So my studio / guest room / card table / I guess those are all the slashes, has been commandeered by some guests, which is great. It's been fun. But that means I haven't been able to sit down and actually focus in on the podcast. So right now I'm doing it from the lovely space of my car. And I get to talk to you today about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. One of the, in my opinion, but this opinion has been spread over multiple movies in the MCU by myself, is one of the best movies that has come out. Now, the reason I say that is not only because it's got Chris Pratt in it, not only because we get introduced to some pretty integral characters that play a huge part as we progress towards Infinity War, and we know they're going to play a big part in Endgame, but mainly just because the whole tone of the movie is one that is just very different. It's a different level of there's different colors, there's different worlds introduced. There is music that we haven't seen within the MCU as well. Just a lot of choices by the director, James Gunn, who has currently been rehired after being fired for some old tweets to direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which isn't going to go into production until 2021. But still, we get to see his unique style of directing bring us another amazing film to this trilogy and, you know, bring back a lot of those characters. Who knows what's going to happen in that one, but we're not talking about that one. Let's go back to Volume 1. Okay, as I mentioned, we get introduced to Star-Lord, Peter Quill. We get to see his origin story, his backstory when he was on Earth, and how he was taken away and what he remembers. So he was stuck in the early 80s, and he's been troubled with the fact that he was essentially kidnapped by Yondu and the Ravagers, and he was a young child who hadn't been exposed to much, and he grew up in this world that was about scavenging and fighting for yourself and being very selfish, and he's this narcissistic, somewhat heroic character who kind of bumbles into being a hero at times, but usually he's finding himself being somewhat of a thief as we see moving forward, but then finds some righteousness towards the end as he forms a team. We get to see some other characters join up. And, you know, we talk about Avengers as a team-up movie, and one thing that I find unique about this is it's a group up movie, even if that's the right term. But we don't see necessarily them teaming up as characters that we've known prior. We see them come together as a group, and they're one of the only groups in the MCU that joins the team ups. I know that's a lot of words jumbled together, but for real though, like think about that. This is what's unique about this movie is we get to see a group of people come together as, you know, they reference themselves as a family and as friends. They are as a unit introduced into other individual origin stories throughout the MCU. So you got Iron Man, you got Captain America, you got Thor, even the Winter Soldier. You got all these individuals who have their own origin stories, and this one is a group of four that have an origin story, which is that's pretty intense. And the fact that they are all so strong as individual characters, but as a group together, they give us very memorable moments and a very visually stimulating experience throughout traveling through the universe and, you know, traveling through doing all these adventures together. And, you know, they have all these idiosyncrasies and things that they only experience together, which also brings us a different kind of superhero movie, which I very much enjoy. So we also get introduced to Gamora, who plays a huge part. She is the daughter of Thanos, who was essentially adopted and or kidnapped. Nebula is also her sister, who was essentially created and ripped apart and built back together. We see Ronan in this. Nova Corps is introduced. I'm mentioning all of the outside characters, and I don't know why I didn't start here first, but let's go back to the people that matter most to us, that group that I was just mentioning. Rocket Raccoon and Groot, and we see, I mentioned Peter Quill, and we see Drax the Destroyer. Drax the Destroyer, I want to talk about for a second, because in the comic books, Drax the Destroyer is one of the individuals that can defeat Thanos. One of the only that can defeat Thanos, just with his brute strength and his fighting style in general. And what's interesting about this, which is why I want to touch on it, is what I have noticed in the Marvel Cinematic Universe throughout time is you see these individuals who will have fight sequences within either their origin story or one of the team-up movies. And we see them in these fight scenes where they can't necessarily either keep up, or it's just like cutting down to the like to the last second, or it's like one last punch, or they get like a good kick in. But these individuals, as we see in the later movies, are some of the strongest in the universe that they write in. So that you see something like Captain America, who is holding open the Infinity Gauntlet from what is supposed to be one of the strongest beings in the universe of Thanos with the gauntlet on, who has all of the stones in it. Yet we see Captain America, you know, going toe-to-toe with Loki in Germany, with Crossbones, like he's having these fights with mortals, and he's keeping up. He defeats them, but it seems like it's like, you know, he's having a hard time doing it. So with Drax gets his ass kicked in this by Ronan. And Ronan, you know, while he may be a powerful being, he, you know, if you think about Drax being the Destroyer and someone who can defeat Thanos, I just thought that was another interesting thing where they're definitely trying to showcase the fact that Ronan is a badass villain. But when you do that, and when you kind of downplay what Drax can do, and maybe it's because he was oversaturated with his pain from the loss from his family, but I digress. This movie itself, as I mentioned, had some unique points to it. So the colors, the places they go to, so they go to nowhere for the first time. They go to Nova, which is a very colorful planet with colorful, like there's so many beings and alien races that we see going through that. And usually all the other MCU movies are going, they start from Earth and they are on Earth. And in the comics, we do see a lot of the characters that we already know actually go up and participate in activities with the Guardians of the Galaxy, Iron Man being one. But in this one, we're just being introduced to them, which is fantastic. So we're also introduced to a soundtrack that is very unique to this film itself, which is an early 80s soundtrack. And we see that carry over into the second movie as well, Volume 2. But the first movie had some songs that I wasn't necessarily anticipating, but I did enjoy. I love 80s music, but usually I like 80s music that's very poppy. You know, we're talking George Michael, Phil Collins, Annie Lennox. But I'm not saying that I didn't enjoy the music in this, but it's definitely a different different section of the 80s. And, you know, when we look at decades of music and we say 80s or 90s or 2000s, we think we're referencing the entirety of that decade. But when you say 80s, let's break down the 80s. Pre-1985, you're still dealing with a lot of late 1970s music. When you go 85 or 84 and above, that's when it starts getting that poppy, like 80s music that everybody actually when they're speaking about it, is potentially referencing. When we talk about pop culture and 80s movies, 80s music, it is usually music from the latter part of that decade. And that goes for every decade. And so for this one, when they say there's 80s music in it, it is usually late 70s to early 80s music. And so some of the songs in there, like Cherry Bomb, which played a pivotal, it was a pivotal song choice as they were getting prepped and sharing their plan with the rest of the Ravengers, which I thought was an awesome montage scene with that song. That was pretty dope. But it's not until, I think, Volume 2 that I think, for me personally, did I see an 80s song used really well when they played The Chain by Fleetwood Mac when they were leaving the ship to go with Ego. But, you know, once again, those are just my opinions. I think that I did want to see a lot more of that 80s pop in there because I love when people utilize that music for current movies and for current plots and montages. But it you know, they didn't make this movie for me. They made it for everyone. And a lot of those songs appeal and or bring up a lot of people's past and a lot of people's memories. So I think this movie overall was done so well, not only for the action sequences, and as I mentioned, the colors and the themes and the origin story and how they brought this group together. But this movie itself was so funny. It was written really well. James Gunn did such an awesome job of writing these characters and creating such a unit of people that at first didn't want to get along. They didn't want to join up together. They were all individuals who felt that they could do more impact and do more things as, you know, like one-on-one, just by themselves. And then they realize that they can get more done together. And then you see at the end that they actually could only defeat Ronan by working together, by taking the Power Stone's energy together, even though Star-Lord, we find out later, is half God or half celestial. They help him out anyway because they figure they're going to die. And if they are, you know, going to die at this point, they're going to die together because they're all fighting for the same cause. And Ronan, as a villain, was a pretty bad cause. With the Power Stone, he was going to defeat and just end Nova completely, just decimate the planet with that stone. So they were able to defeat him by being together. And that's the whole point of Guardians, is being together and understanding that, you know, as a unit, they were stronger than ever before. This movie, as I have shared, is one of my favorites. It will remain one of my favorites. After watching it again, you always think with these movies, this is the thing, you always think with these movies that you're going to watch it and go, oh, I've already seen it. And in your mind, you start like reflecting on all the things that you know so well. And then you watch it again and you see all of it put together in the way that the director had in his mind and that vision. And you watch it and it's just this seamless, amazing experience that you get to watch again. And there are some movies out there that when you watch them, yeah, you get what you expect. You get like those major points, the parts that you remember, your favorite parts or the montage scenes. You like those moments. And then the rest of it, you're kind of like, eh. But this movie and other movies that we have, that Kyle and I have been rewatching, when you watch them, you do have those major moments because they're superheroes and there's parts in there that you really connect to or relate to or want to remember or stay in your memory because they're just amazing parts of the movie. This one was so well put together and was so well done and acted and written and directed that like when I watched it, I don't get that. I get a completely different feeling from the memories I have of the movie. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like I can remember parts right now of Volume 2 where I'm like, oh yeah, and then Groot as a little baby brings all those little pieces as he's trying to find Yondu's new fin. And I think about that. But then when I sit down and watch it in its entirety, I get so much of that movie back. So I would advise if you haven't seen it, but you continue to remind yourself of the favorite parts, you're like, oh yeah, I got to go back and see it. I would watch this movie again because it is one that needs to be experienced in its entirety. Anyway, overall, this movie, if it's a 10 out of 10 scale, I'll give it 10 out of 10. Kyle may have some different opinions. I'll ask him later. I don't really care right now because what matters is my opinion. That's it. I'm in my car. I'm sharing my opinion. I can yell if I want. I can grab the steering wheel and shake it if I want to just kind of get out all of my passion for this movie. Kyle is going to talk to us about Age of Ultron, and that is coming out very soon. As we continue to count down to Endgame, we need to keep pumping out these episodes and keep watching these movies and spending all of our lives watching movies, getting this stuff just stacked into our brain to where we can't pack anything else in. For now, I will say goodbye. And, you know, be prepared because we're in the end game now. And hopefully we hear from Kyle soon, and hopefully he's still as sexy as ever. Peace.